Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Midday Magazine for this August 31st, 2023. I have your host, James J. Mailoff here. I am joined right now by our great friend, Janelle Weir, horticultural educator with the UW-Madison Division of Extension, Marathon County, and Wood County. Janelle, good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
It's been so long. We were just joking beforehand. It feels like you were just here. It feels like you were just in. And it's always good to have you here. I make no bones about it. I love talking to you. I learn every time we talk. And it's not just me. My dad is a huge fan of the segment. You've helped him with his lawn so much. And that may have gotten you more points than I have in the family. And I don't know how that works, but it is what it is.
It's because it's a lawn.
It makes sense. You're right. That adds up. We're going to get into a real fun topic today. Admittedly, journalistically, I'm a huge autumn fan. I love fall. It's my favorite season. I think a lot of us can relate to that out there. So we're going to get into a little bit of this.
Yeah. So today, what I'm going to talk about is the change of colors, fall change of colors. And, you know, kind of thinking about this, it really comes down to nature doesn't waste anything. You know, nutrients are constantly being recycled, you know, as humans, we're mammals, we're animals, right? And so we get our nutrients from the plants and animals that we eat, right? Well, plants, they get their nutrients from a combination of the sunlight. They mix the sunlight with carbon and water, and they make sugars. And they use that sugar to grow, right? So when during the summertime, the majority of a plant's nutrients are going to be inside the leaves, and are mostly what we're thinking about is that nitrogen and that phosphorus. If we think back to fertilizers, when we talk about fertilizing, we think about those main three that are numbers that are on every package of fertilizers. I think people talk about adding 10, 10, 10 in the spring to their vegetable gardens, right? Those first two numbers are nitrogen and phosphorus. They are incredibly important. They are the most, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. They're the most important nutrients for plant growth, okay? So during the summertime, the majority of those nutrients are going to be inside the leaves, and they're stored either as pigments or proteins. And these are going to be things that are important for plants to use these pigments for photosynthesis, okay? So photosynthesis, it's just that process of making those sugars so that way the plant can grow. These nutrients are incredibly valuable in nature. Like I just said, you know, we get our nutrients by eating other organisms, right? Well, the plant's not going to waste those nutrients that are sitting inside those leaves when it comes time for it to drop its leaves in the fall. Now, deciduous plants, those are the plants that drop their leaves. They do that to reduce the amount of moisture that they would lose over the wintertime, okay? So the leaves are going to drop one way or another. Now, the plant's not going to waste those nutrients, though. And so what it does is it takes the nutrients and it disassembles those pigments. And the plant actually reabsorbs those pigments back into the stem and into the roots.
So, Janelle, how do the plants know when to do this? Do they have, they just look at their calendar? Or do they get an update on their phone?
I mean, that's a push notification.
Right, that's how I know when the season's
okay, right? So they get the message by the sun, the length of the day, shortening over time, and also through the cooler temperatures. Cooler temperatures are going to help give that message, but even without the cooler temperatures, the plant would get that message just by the change in the day length.
Interesting.
So even if we have a warmer than usual fall, we're still going to have a change in colors.
Nature's so smart.
Thankfully
for us.
What do they call that? Like a redundancy? Failure redundancy?
Yes, failure redundancy. It's interesting. It is. So most of this work is done before we see a lot of that color change.
Yes, that's exactly right. So that disassembly is happening, you know, before that disassembly is probably happening back in July, right?
Wow.
Before we even see anything, when we start to see it is really at the very end stage of the process. And so that chlorophyll is getting broken down mm-hmm. and reabsorbed by the plant. In the meantime, we've got a couple of other pigments that are in play. So the chlorophyll's the green. That's what we see as green, and that's going to be responsible for photosynthesis. As it gets disassembled, these two other pigments come into play. First one's going to be, and I had to YouTube this so that way I would pronounce it correctly. And I'm so happy that I did, because I have always thought the way this word is pronounced was carotenoids.
Yeah, it's, I probably would have said it like that.
Turns out it's carotenoids.
Okay, we both learned on that one.
Oh, yeah.
We both learned.
Yep.
Okay.
So YouTube's my friend big time.
Yeah, thank you, YouTube. Thank you, YouTube. Yeah.
So carotenoids, they are yellow hues. Now, the cool thing about carotenoids is they are always present. Even when the leaf turns green, even when the leaf looks green, the carotenoids, the yellow hues, are present. It's just that the green chlorophyll is so strong, it's masking the carotenoids.
Oh. Huh.
Now, the purpose of the carotenoids is they are actually like protectors. The process of photosynthesis would destroy the leaf if the carotenoids weren't there protecting the leaf.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that was pretty cool.
It is interesting, huh?
And then we've got your anthocyanins. So your anthocyanins, those are going to be responsible for those red and orange hues. They're not always there. What happens is as the chlorophyll is breaking down, anthocyanins are starting to ramp up in production. You'll notice those green leaves that kind of turn a real burgundy color, and then shortly after that, they'll turn a real brilliant red and orange. What's happening there is the anthocyanin production is ramping up as the chlorophyll is breaking down and being reabsorbed by the plant.
Wow. That's wild. There's so much of that I don't think I've ever processed. I've heard some of this before, but I hadn't really processed before. Wow.
You know, the piece that I hadn't appreciated before, and I think it might be, I'm right now listening to an audiobook, Braiding Sweetgrass, by Robin Kimmerer-Wall, I believe is her name. She is a scientist. She's a botanist, and she's also indigenous. And so it's a PhD reflection through an indigenous lens. I think that might be kind of why when I was thinking about this this morning, I kind of got my ear thinking about it in a little bit of a different way. The whole concept of nutrient recycling and how we're all a part of the system, you know. Trees know not to waste anything. And, you know, there might be a message there for us, too.
Yeah, absolutely. A big lesson. Yeah, it's been telling us for a long time. And I got to check that book out. That sounds amazing. That sounds like a really good book. So what are some factors that affect the fall colors?
So not all fall is the same. They're not, you know, it's not like every single one is going to be knock your socks off brilliant colors, right? The years that you have the most in just brilliant display of colors are going to be years where we have really cool weather and sunny weather. If we have a freeze too fast, that's going to interrupt that whole process of recycling those nutrients. It actually breaks down the leaves faster, and we kind of will end up with more dull brown colors, the tannins taking over instead. Another thing that can influence how brilliant the colors are is stress on the trees or on the shrubs. So that's going to be stress, like maybe they just didn't get enough nutrients. You'll see some really brilliant colors from dying trees. You'll also see that from maybe some diseases or any wounds that happen. Drought stress as well. So if we have nice, cool, sunny temperatures, but not freezing, you know, a nice long season, a fall season, because of the drought that we had earlier this year, we might be in for a really, really gorgeous fall.
Yeah, I was going to ask, and not to, you know, make you a farmer's almanac or anything, but looking at the summer we've had, the season we have, are there any kind of way we're seeing coming, or way it's going to look coming up? I'm trying to say I'm trying not to say the word predict. I don't want to put that on your shoulders or anything.
Well,
but But yeah, can we kind of gauge what might be coming?
I'm kind of thinking we're going to between, now if we have too much stress leading up into fall, then the plants will kind of give up the pooch and just kind of go brown instead. I think we've got the perfect storm between the drought earlier and the rains that have come since, that I think the plants are going to be just stressed enough. The weather piece, I don't know. We might be in for, I keep hearing rumblings that we might be in for a colder winter than we've had, we've been spoiled the past few years.
Yeah.
Which wouldn't be a bad thing, it helps reduce disease and pest issues.
And I'm too focused on autumn and what you said about the changing of the colors and all that. I can hug you. I mean, that is awesome. You just made our day. You just said that's awesome news. I don't want to get us off in the weeds here on a side tangent, but I did, you touched on something, and I've thought of this before and never really talked to somebody that actually knows about this stuff. But it does seem like in nature we have a number of these moments with our plant life where they, when they're dying, they give it all. Like they put out there. I'm so sorry. I'm not thinking of the plant that does this, where its most beautiful moment is right before it dies. It puts all the color and everything it's got into it, kind of. And it only blooms once a year, once in a while. I think it's an orchid that does this. There's a couple of plants like this.
There's probably lots of plants
probably
that do
is.
That, yeah.
I was going to the point of where I'm trying to go with this and without rambling, is the idea that trees do this too. There's something beautiful about that in nature that does this.
The entire point of at least living organisms is to pass on genetic information, right? So, or at least from a biological point of view, okay? And so, if a plant is really, really stressed out, and I've done this, I shouldn't even admit this on the air, but I've done this with plants before where I have just pushed them. I'm thinking about a bougainvillea that I'm feeling really guilty about actually right now. Mm-hmm. But I pushed that poor bougainvillea all the way to the brink. And I'll tell you what, right before it died, it pushed out the last, it used up the last of its energy to create flowers, just hoping that something would get pollinated and it'd make a seed. Of course, it was inside my house in the middle of winter, and I was slowly watching it starve to death from water.
Yeah,
I know. I'm kind of brutal.
I heard something that just blew my mind a couple of days ago. I was paying attention to the wildfires we've been having and like a lot of people worrying about the people out in California or different places in Canada, worrying about these trees and our wildlife in these areas. It pulls my heart right there. But one of the cool things I heard was this. I apologize again, not remembering the type of tree, but this pine or something.
Jack pine.
It knows what's coming. That this fire is happening, that it's in stress, it is in danger. It doesn't know specifically that it's a fire, but it knows that it is in danger. And its last effort is sprouting out seeds, kicking out seeds right before this happens.
So I'm thinking of something different. Jack pines, they require fire. I hope I'm correct. I believe it is a jack pine that requires fire for the seeds to be able to grow.
I think we are thinking of the same thing. That's just, it's incredible.
It is. And it's, I felt the same way you did when I first heard about it. But then when you take, and when you zoom all the way out and you're standing on the moon looking back at the earth, everything that at least in the natural world happens, it's happening for a reason, and it's been happening for a long time, right?
Yeah.
Lightning's been striking for a long time. Mm-hmm. And if a lightning strike alone was enough to end, life in a certain spot on this planet, that wouldn't make sense over time, right? Like everything has a purpose. Everything has its place.
Everything's connected.
Yes.
It truly is. When it comes to storing tender bulbs for the winter, that was something we were going to get into, it looks like, or
do
no?
Do we have?
We could make a little bit of time for that if you want. Otherwise, if you want to talk some more about the weather, the stress of the other thing, that's fine too.
I could jump and just talk a little bit about some upcoming programs, I've got a really exciting opportunity folks.
I think that sounds good. Let's go ahead. We got about 10 minutes left. Let's get into that.
Got it. Okay. So one thing I wanted to share with everybody, I'm super excited about the office that I work from, Extension. We are co-hosting Science on the River again this year. This year it will be September 30th, Saturday, September 30th. Just like previous years, we're going to have discovery stations set along the river. And right now we're looking for folks that are interested in hosting a discovery station. Mm. So what does that mean? What is a discovery station? Yeah. Well, basically, what you are going to do is you are going to host a little booth. You needs to be have some sort of STEM focus, right? Mm-hmm. So that STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. You need to have somebody present at the booth the entire time. So the festival runs from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Now, this is not a vendor opportunity. We're not looking for folks to engage in sales. It's demonstration science activities, right? And if you've got an opportunity to do something interactive, that is definitely encouraged. But if you've just got some cool materials you want to share, that's fine to give you an idea of some different something that I've done in the past is I dressed up a cabbage head in my son's blazer from when he was in high school and my brother-in-law's fedora and put some googly eyes on him and then called him Inspector Cabbage.
Yes.
And I did a pH, how you can use cabbage juice as a pH indicator.
That's
and
great.
It honestly, if you've never seen that or done that before, it's so much fun because it's like a magic show with cabbage juice.
Oh, that's so good. First up, that's a great way to pull them in. That's a great way to pull
them in. Oh, yeah. Everyone wanted it. I had people driving by and I could see them from their cars looking.
That's a great, great idea. But it's also the point of STEM, the point of all of this, it's fun learning. It's fun knowledge. And if you have a way of doing that, if you consider yourself, maybe you got a little Neil deGrasse Tyson in you, maybe a little Bill Nye in you or something like that, bring this to us. We'd love to have you be a part of this event.
Share. Yeah. So if you're a part of an organization that you think, you know, has a outreach slant, we would love to have you involved with us. If this is something that's interesting to you, you can reach out to my colleague, Kayla Rombalski. She's over at the Extension office at 715-421-8440.
With this event, too, we're going to be talking about this leading up to it. We're going to be sure to make sure to remind people about it and everything. And if you need that information again, weeks later, whatever, we'll have it. So please reach out to us. If you can't reach Kayla or something, reach out to us because we will definitely make sure to get you a part of this.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And also, you know, just for everybody else, so that's kind of a shout out to anybody who may be a part of an organization or just have a love of, you know, sharing their favorite STEM subject, you can definitely reach out. Otherwise, for everybody else, just kind of keep that on your calendar.
Yeah, yeah. We'll meet you there. It's going to be a fun time. You have another one coming up programs-wise, Sewing Success. That's always an interesting one. I like talking about this.
I'm really excited about this program. So this is if you are interested in taking a deep dive into beginning horticulture, gardening, this is going to take you through. So some of the things that we talk about some basic botany skills. We talk about integrated pest management. We apply integrated pest management to weeds, diseases, insects, wildlife. And then we talk a little bit about really specific types of plants that you're going to grow. So lawns, small fruits, fruit trees, vegetable gardens, perennial beds, all of those types of things. So we're going to give you those basic concepts. And then also kind of it's more about teaching you how to teach yourself. I teach you how to find appropriate resources. Mm-hmm. This course is 12 weeks. It's going to be most Tuesday evenings at the McMillan Library here in Wisconsin Rapids from 5 to 7:30. Mm-hmm. The cost for this program is $125. And this is considered an approved learning opportunity. If your goal has always been to become a Wisconsin Master Gardener, you can use this as a vehicle to become a Master Gardener. But, however, let's say right now it's just not the season in your life to do volunteering. That's okay. You can come and just share and learn about gardening with me.
The point of all of our friends at Extension is get this knowledge out to you, and we want you to be a part of it. If you can volunteer, if you can be a part of those things in an extended way, we'd love that. I don't mean to say in an extended way.
I liked it. I saw it.
but we do want you to be a part of these things, however way that you're comfortable with.
Yes. It's our goal is the Wisconsin Idea. Share that information.
Foundations in gardening, a little similar.
Very, very similar. Mm-hmm. You know, it's basically, it's the content is the same. The delivery is different. Mm. So with Foundations in Gardening, this is a self-paced course, completely online. It runs about the same time from September through December. It is also an approved learning opportunity with the Wisconsin Master Gardener Program. If you are interested in registering for Foundations in Gardening, I would suggest you could definitely give me a call down at the Extension office and I could send you a link. Otherwise, if you just Google Foundations in Gardening UW-Madison, that should get you to it.
Mm-hmm. And you guys have some webinars coming up that I wanted to touch on as well.
Yeah, so we've got some free webinars. If you're familiar with the term lunch and learn, that's exactly what these are. Short, 30 minutes. They usually leave about 5 to 10 minutes at the end for questions. And we've got some specialists that will be sharing their information at noon. So the first one was actually yesterday. That was about growing garlic. But you know what? If you're disappointed that you missed that, no problem, because the recording is going to be on the website within the next couple of days.
That's cool.
So the first one was growing garlic. We've got another one coming up on composting. That one's going to be September 6th. And then on September 13th, there's going to be another one about soil testing. Now, for any of these, if noon doesn't work for you, that's not a problem. We put the recorded programs up on the website. The only difference is you won't have an opportunity for live questions. Mm-hmm. Although, if you really want to, I'm pretty sure that they share their contact information. So if you did have a follow-up question, you can email these folks and they'll respond to you. But those are all free if you're interested. I would suggest just Google webinars for Wisconsin gardeners.
Yeah. It's another way of, again, getting that knowledge out there to people and just, you know, you being a part of these things. When we were touching on Science by the River, again, just for those that don't know, it's a free one-day event. And you know, Extension, like a lot of organizations and a lot of nonprofits, could certainly use the dollars and cents. It goes a long way in everything. But doing these things for free, having these events for the community, that's so much about what you guys are doing and what you're about, getting that knowledge out there.
We're about getting that knowledge out there. And like with Science by the River, I really think about community resilience. Mm-hmm. I think about how important it is, you know, like when we see our neighbors, you know, there's so many more rippling effects that happen beyond just, you know, engaging young people in science education, which it definitely does, but it also engages the young at heart, too.
This has been a really, really fun conversation. A couple of things we've been able to cover today, Janelle. It was a lot of fun. As we were talking about fall color changes, is there anything we can do when we look at those things, when we see this stuff happening in our day-to-day lives, to really like make the most of the moment, to really appreciate, to really enjoy Mother Nature? Is there anything you do yourself to kind of make just be in that moment and enjoy that? We get no reruns in Mother Nature, but we have some consistency there. It's this mixed bag. I feel like for myself, sometimes I'll look at a tree this fall and bound to happen, and I'll be looking at it and I'm feeling like I'm missing something, like I'm not appreciating it enough. I feel like knowing this stuff is going to help me understand it a little bit more and appreciate it even more. Is that something for you that you do or you would recommend even?
So, yes, I think the more that I have learned about anything, it has made me appreciate it. When I was in college, I had to take some astronomy courses and learn the night sky. Mm. And, you know, I've always, like when I was a kid, I was really interested in becoming an astronaut. And I've always been amazed by the heavens. But learning the sky like a map and knowing where to expect to see the stars and just understanding the process of star evolution and things like that, It made me appreciate the night sky even more. The more I learn about anything, the more, you know, just like I said, about the whole leaves changing their colors, you know, it's not always necessarily the facts, but maybe the bigger message that I'm, now that I'm getting older, I'm starting to pull out, kind of like that whole nitrogen, that nutrient recycling, and thinking about how, you know, she doesn't waste a thing, does she, Mother Nature?
No. Way to tie it all back together. Nicely done. And a great lesson right there to end on. Thank you for that. Appreciate it. We'll talk again real soon. Appreciate you, Janelle. Thanks for the time.
Thank you.
Janelle, we are horticultural educator at UW-Madison, Division of Extension, Marathon County, and Wood County. We'll have more Midday Magazine for you tomorrow right here on WFHR, locally grown radio.